This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 767, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands and wearing their masks and holding it together. Hello, welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 767. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and this is my co-host, Josh Lanigan.
Hello.
And we are iFanboy.
That's us.
Forever and ever. Forever to be known. Every week we read our comics, and one of us picks their favorite book. We call it the Pick of the Week. That's the book we lead the show with. And then we talk about other books, talk about other things we read, the patron pick. Hopefully some listener mail gets answered, and hopefully we have a good time. All of us, collectively, you, us, everyone. We have a good time. Mm-hmm. If you don't, what are we going to do? Although I guess it is our fault. That would be our fault.
I mean, that's the formula, though.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know how to make other people happy, so I'm just like, oh, I'll try to make Connor happy. And that tends to work.
And the thing is, ultimately, this is an entertainment show, so hopefully you're entertained. If you aren't entertained, then I guess that's our bad. But we'll try our best.
Why are you constantly making excuses?
I don't
know. For disappointing people.
I just assume.
I just assume they hate us. Everyone out there is just listening and rolling their eyes.
Hate listening.
This bullshit again. Listening for 10 years, I hate it.
This week, Josh has the pick.
I did. It's very nice. You know, you get a new number one issue or, you know, like a thing here and there, you know, that's great. And that's fine. And you'll go back and be like, OK, it's not as exciting as it was. But there are a couple of things where, you know, they come out and you go, oh, I really like this last one. And then that, you know, the newer one has that same thing. You know, it's just a voice or it's a thing you really like. And so that's why we were talking about King in Black Thunderbolts number two.
Mm-hmm.
Now, number one was the pick?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I wasn't sure if it was just a book that I really liked that week.
No. You shocked the world with your King in Black pick.
It was a Taskmaster kind of week.
It was.
And up until I got to Thunderbolts 2, my leader was Taskmaster 3, which I thought was funny. And I was like, Connor, I'm down to two Taskmaster books.
Well, what's interesting is they're very different Taskmaster books.
Yes.
They're very different Taskmaster characterizations.
Yeah, so let's talk about one, and then we'll get to the other one in a bit. You know, this is a pretty good Thunderbolts book, and when Thunderbolts is done really well, it can be a lot of fun. And I think it's really important to
with these books is to be flexible about them. And, you know, the original Thunderbolts book was kind of fun, and it, you know, it was a little disbelievable, but you kind of went along with it, you know. And then I think my other favorite run was Jeff Parker with Kev Walker. He had a really good Thunderbolts run. And then there's this, you know, King in Black one. And I don't know why every time I've read a Suicide Squad book, I've wanted to throw it down and stop. But for something, for some reason, these Marvel ones have been really fun for me. So your team here is Batroc Zelibert. Great Batroc in this issue. I don't want to focus all on Taskmaster. You've got Star, who's the sort of evil Captain Marvel with an Infinity Stone.
We had that question last time. She's flat out evil.
Is it evil, or is it she just doesn't give a
shit? She's a villain.
Yeah, I guess.
Which is fine.
It's almost
good.
Yeah, and then Mr. Fear, who... you know, is the clown, basically, of this thing. You know, but you actually, you know, Taskmaster gets a little heroic. It's interesting because if I were to really game that out, he's a guy who takes on the qualities and skills of other people. And if you look at this book, that's what he needed to be here, is the leader guy. So he's sort of the, you know, the anti-Cap, but... you know, in the not anti, like opposite, but just sort of the, you know, antagonist Cap kind of character in this. He's like, well, I've got to lead the thing. And you know, the boss, Kingpin, says, you guys can't wear your masks. So they don't have them on the whole time. And then he's like, that's it. Put the masks on. You know, he's being the leader. He's got the shield. And there was just a lot of stuff in here that was really fun. Everything with Batroc, everything Batroc said was super fun.
Right.
You know, and he got to have a sort of a badass moment. Was it with Mr. Fear? When he sort of... holds him against the wall with his leg, and it's so they do. It's a nice little thing that Rosenberg does, and I think people do it with this character. Is like, it's really easy to take one of these sort of weird supervillain characters and make fun of them. You know, your Stiltman jokes, your stuff like that. But when you do that, but then bring it back to like, oh, that's why this character has been around for a long time and is actually formidable. I really like that as a thing. You know, it's fun to make the jokes for a little bit when you have that sort of dynamic, though. That can be fun. And the art really helped on that. That page that I'm talking about, which is page 7 on your digital reader, you know, he's like in this full split and he's kind of smug. And, you know, Star could just kind of not be bothered with the whole thing. You know, I had fun with it. I think the art by Juan Ferreira.
Is
really fantastic.
Ferreira.
And right down to the, you know, he colors it himself.
Yep.
And it's just great. You know, there's just... it's got there's a page here where they jump on a bus and they're escaping the prison, and you don't see them get on the bus, but you know, you flip page and there's like a deer in the middle of the road and the sun's either going down or coming up, and the deer looks up, and the second panel, you know, it's like a venom deer, and then the third panel is just them bursting through it with the bus, you know,
right?
And to take a moment with a little scene like that, like a little, if you were watching a movie, it would be like a, you know, like a smash cut to a serene sound. And then, you know, the bus comes in from off camera. It's just got a sort of a nice cinematic pacing to it. You know, there's a thing where they drive a bus off a bridge and then Star comes along and saves them. It's, I keep wanting to say anti-superhero, but it's like bizarro superhero stuff. Like they're doing the hero stuff,
right?
But they're awful.
And the thing is, like, Taskmaster is a mercenary. So that's how you get around it. He's being paid, or not paid, in this case, paid with his life. Mm-hmm. He's been hired to do a job. And that job is not to kill someone this time. It's to, what, I don't even remember what they're doing.
I think the order was just like, stop this.
Right.
I think that's their job. And just finally, the thing that put me over the top at the end is that they're trying to find this source of power.
Yeah.
And it leads them out to Jones Beach on Long Island on the southern shore. And there they find the lower half of the sentry stuffed in a bush.
Because he was ripped in half in the story. Yep. Yeah, that was funny.
They figure there's still a lot of power and the guy's got a lot of energy inside this half. So they're going to make a bomb out of the lower half of the sentry, I guess.
Which is terrific in terms of if you have to use the sentry, you might as well make him literally the butt of a joke.
Rosenberg's script is really funny. And I really look forward when I see his name on something because it is always entertaining to read his stuff, I think. And you know, it's that we haven't talked about this in a while, but you used to always talk about like the fun of something when you can tell the creators are having fun with something. And that's what's happening here. They're... They're just having fun with it. And one of the things I've noticed about the King in Black, all the minis that I've read, is it for some reason, and I don't know because I'm not reading the main story, which I'm sure is super arch. Every book kind of seems like these are the ones who are going to fix things.
Right.
Like I could see like, oh, this little Suicide Squad thing, they're going to be the ones to fix everything. And then over in the Fantastic Four, it seems like, no, they're the ones. Everyone that I read, like that seems to be the main linchpin of the thing, which is kind of interesting. And I'm glad that I hope that it doesn't all become a thing and that, you know, where they all are working towards something in the middle. Or the Black Knight, like his thing
his sword is needed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe it'll be they all come together and that's what has to do it.
It kind of lends stakes, though, to these little books that I think makes them a little more fun as opposed to, like, we're just driving through this thing.
Right.
Which is valid, too. But the ones that I really liked have actually seemed like it mattered to it, but I could just read this story and it would be fine.
So he writes a great Kingpin?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He did that. He did a great Kingpin mini a while ago, which was not funny at all.
This group of characters is fun because, as you said, I mean, Mr. Fear is like a straight up like classic bad guy. Mm-hmm. Star is in a gray area, but clearly landing on the side of villain. Taskmaster is a classic Marvel villain, and Batroc is not silly, but kind of. So
he's a little swashbuckly, is what he is.
Yeah. So you don't have like a
he's like a mercenary too, though.
Yeah. So you have kind of everyone who lives in the gray. So they're bad guys, but they're also capable of reluctantly doing good. They're not super happy about, you know, Star has to convince them to save the people, the other villains in the prison from being overrun by the venom juice or whatever it is, mm-hmm. you know, but they do it. And then you've got Norman Osborn in here for a little bit. So it's fun. I'm glad you picked it the first time because I would never have read this. And I'm glad I didn't really think about what I would have picked this week, but this would have been definitely in the discussion. Like you said, I had a lot of fun reading it. And the art is terrific.
Yeah. It's funny. I'd mentioned Kev Walker, but this has a little bit of a Kev Walker feel
to it. Oh,
for sure
it does. Yeah.
What a great artist. I mean, really, all the way around storytelling, the acting, the compositions. Yeah, it's
funny. Really you shouldn't feel it, but it is a bit of a heroic moment when they put their masks back on and you get the hero pose of them all together. It's like,
yeah.
I shouldn't feel that way about four villains, but
I mean that's classic deconstruction.
Right.
I mean that's like you're taking the thing that you're used to, that idiom, and you're putting it on its head and seeing what kind of feeling it gives you, and that's really interesting.
Traditionally, we don't like it when they make the villains heroic, but. True. In the context of the Thunderbolts, it works.
And in the context of like...
And depending on what villains they are.
Yeah, and hey, the world is ending. Right. It's not unlike... one of the deceased minis. The one with Jason Todd and all the villains.
Unkillables.
Yeah, yeah. It's a little like that. Like, it worked. Which is not the same thing as reforming, you know, Harley Quinn across the line to be...
Well, that one was anchored by Deathstroke, which, again, is similar to
yes.
Taskmaster. And
there are pre-existing conditions that make that work, I think.
Let's move on to Taskmaster, number 3, and keep talking about Taskmaster. Jed McKay, Alessandro Vitti, Guru, EFX, and Joe Caramagna. And it's funny because I've been enjoying this book, but then I feel like I like the Taskmaster in Thunderbolts a little bit more. So when this book came out the same week, the contrast was really stark.
Yeah, I like that. Honestly, I think it's maybe when I say I like Taskmaster, mm-hmm. it's because it's silly. It's not like there's a fixed character where I'm like, oh, I can't wait to see how he decides this. He's kind of a cipher again, in the same way that his powers work, right. And you can do and so you know it depends on the context, I guess, and how somebody's using him.
No, I like it. I mean, he's a guy who is on the run because everyone thinks he did this murder and he didn't do this murder. And now, you know, he's being hunted by Black Widow. And so he's terrified because she's going to kill him.
I love the fact that one of the conceits of this book is that the thing he is most scared of is Black Widow.
Yeah.
Like, he took on Hyperion in the last issue.
Right.
Didn't seem all that bothered about it. He got messed up real bad, but like... He was fine, but Black Widow, that's the real shit. He's really freaked out by her, and I like that. I think that's really interesting. You know, again, it's a really funny script. Like, he inserts himself among this group of...
Apocalyptic Death Cult.
Yep. And there's all these jokes. He's like, these guys are hilarious. And he's talking to Nick Fury on the thing. And he's like, well, do they know Arabic? He goes, these guys can barely read. Stop worrying about it. You know, and then there's another page in here. It's just a lot of really fun and funny situations. He gets bootleg PIM particles so he can shrink and sneak into this office. But they don't work really well. And he starts beeping. Then he grows up big and he's got to run and, you know, he gets into a fight with this lady, and there's an amazing page here.
Yeah.
Page 16.
Yep.
Basically, he does all these moves against the lady superhero who goes after him. And, you know, like, they're captioned, like, with titles. And it's like, that punch I saw one time. That kick Iron Fist uses. That throw that Cap used to toss me out a window. And it's super, you can hear the music. You know what I mean?
Well, it's a play on that. The thing that Marvel uses where they identify all the kung fu moves. And he doesn't know those names because he didn't study them. So he just knows that stomp I saw Shang-Chi do one time. And so it was very funny.
It's great. And, you know, it's that same thing where the art is perfect for the thing, like for the context that it's in. There's pages in Taskmaster's face will sort of change. You know, a lot of times it's Scary Skull, but every once in a while he'll be surprised by something. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're looking at page 18.
Yeah.
At the top of the page, he's like, huh? You know, it's a really nice line between silly and exciting, I think.
Yeah, no, it's a caper kind of thing. It's fun. It's a romp. It was funny to get both these books in the same week, but it's they're both similar kind of capers where the Taskmaster is out of his element doing something he's not used to normally doing. Like in the first book, he's being a hero. In the second book, he's terrified and on the run for his life. And also, he's more your classic looking Taskmaster in this book.
But he's also got to, you know, he's got to do something good in order to help himself out, which is to solve a murder, basically.
Yeah, well, he's ostensibly trying to get these biological, he has to copy their movements because that's how the key for whatever the thing is he's got
to
do.
It's the broadcast energy transmitter. He has to get the biosignatures of three different people so that he can open some file or something like that.
The only way Fury will help clear his name is if he gets these things so that Fury can hack into some bullshit. Like it's convoluted. It doesn't really matter. So he's like, you want my help? You got to go copy these people's movements so I can open this biometric trigger, whatever it was.
Did you notice the Korean superhero lady? She has a tail, like a horse tail.
Oh, really?
Which is weird. That. If you look on the last page, because he scrawls, I didn't kill Maria Hill. Which I don't know. I don't think it's as good a book as Thunderbolts.
Mm-hmm.
Like in terms of like craft.
Yeah, she does have a tail.
But it's real fun to read, and it is one of those things. Now three issues in, I see it comes out in a week, and I'm like, ooh, you know, like it's a highlight for me, and I really like that.
She's the white fox. She has a fox tail.
Oh, that's her fox tail.
That and a feels big W on her abdomen.
Which is weird because you'd think that would be a Korean character of some kind.
Yeah. Well, what are you gonna do? Radiant Black.
Yeah.
Page number one from Kyle Higgins, who was a longtime DC writer under the Geoff Johns regime. He came from that school and did a long run on Nightwing, which I really enjoyed, although I was thinking about it, I couldn't remember anything that happened in it, but I do remember enjoying it. Art by Marcelo Costa, Becca Carey on letters, and this is very much like, I would describe it as the greatest American hero, but a failed writer.
I read it just because I was like, I should read another book.
Yep.
And I don't like or dislike Higgins. Mm-hmm. You know, he's done stuff I've read, and it's like, that's okay. But I've read other sort of creator-owned stuff, and it just didn't really do a lot for me. It was really interesting to me, though, is that this character, his situation is very specific. And it's one that I'm not unfamiliar with. You know, he leaves his small town to move to Los Angeles to become a writer, but he's massively in debt and he's driving Uber and he's finally got to go home, you know, and he's embarrassed about that.
Yep.
And you know, he meets his old friend Styles. I'm sorry.
Any of those guys,
you know, and they go out on the town and, you know, you find out it's much worse. He's talking about a book deal he's got, but he hasn't even written the book. And so he's just kind of a loser, really.
He says he has a book deal, but he really just talked to an editor one time 4 years ago.
The editor
kind of liked his idea.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have it. Like, it gets worse the more he reveals, you know, it starts off, I'm just driving Uber while I write my book. And then it's, I just got to get my book done. I got an editor waiting for it. And then once that happens, I'll get my advance. And well, he would have gotten his advance already if he had actually had a book deal. But and then it just gets worse and worse once you reveal that he went to LA, and it was the classic story of he didn't even fail. He didn't even try.
Yeah. And I think that we're not even gotten to the real point of the book, although I would disagree about that in a way. So basically, he becomes Darkhawk. That's all it is.
Well, I think it's the Greatest American Hero. It is all the same thing. But they stumble out of the bar, and there's a glowing black orb, I guess, above the train tracks. Mm-hmm. When he touches it, he gets encased in a superhero outfit.
Yeah.
And then the cops show up, and then there's a whole thing.
Ron bought me the Darkhawk book at some point, and I actually read it. And it's like the way that the suit works.
He gave you one of his 25 copies of Darkhawk number one?
No, he bought the trade. And to be fair, I read it.
Wow.
I'm not going to talk
about it. I read it when it came out. I read all those.
Anyway, that's exactly what it reminded me of. But either way, it's that same trope.
Well, superhero trope, yeah.
I will say two things. I think that was the least interesting part of it. I thought, wow, everything else before this had a real air of personal to it. And I know this guy. I know a lot of these guys. I have a lot of this guy in me. You know what I mean? It was very familiar. It was very extreme, but I moved to Los Angeles and I'm not currently a writer. So you do the math on that. And I thought that was super interesting. So when it turns into the superhero story, I thought, I don't need this.
I'll just do a creator-owned book about the other thing. Image is going to publish that. No one's going to buy that one.
I thought the characters were really interesting and the conflicts and everything that were going on were also. Mm-hmm. I was into that. So when you introduce that other thing, it was a little like, you know, when you make a supernatural book out of something they don't have to. And it's a feature of comics that you have to have that fantastic element. But then the other thing was, I thought, this is very personal.
Yeah. He's a working writer, though.
Yeah. But I went to it's also Power Rangers because he looks like a Power Ranger. Hmm. When I went, I did read the essay in the back because I wanted to know.
Yeah.
And there was a lot in there that was pretty bitter and pretty angry. I don't know if he was talking about the comic industry or the TV industry. It looks like he'd been working, you know, I think he worked on the Power Rangers in some way. I don't know if it's the comic book.
He wrote the comic.
Okay. You know, and he says, you know, fast forward to 13 years later, tells the story. I'm moving to California. I've graduated from film school. I made a big superhero noir and you know, that helped me make a career in comic books. He made like a short film, I think, and that got him his first job in comics. It was a different path back then and a pretty good one. And he goes, you know, which should have been a great thing, right? Considering my love of superheroes and storytelling. Yeah, it wasn't. Here's the thing I've learned. No matter who you are, no matter what industry you're in, there's going to be assholes. There's going to be cliques. There's going to be people who make you feel like you're eight and you still watch a show that's epically uncool. And I was like, oh, shit. He's going through a thing here.
Yeah.
And that's what interested me.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by, and this is most of the people in comics, mid-level folks. Because it is hard to make a living in comics. And it's hard to do it over a really long period of time.
He's been doing it for a long time. Because we interviewed him on the video show, and that would have been 12 years ago, like when he was brand new, and I remember we interviewed him at Comic-Con, and then I remember running into him at a Free Comic Book Day signing in LA, my first year in LA, in the Valley, and then we have mutual friends, like he's friends with our friend Ben Simpson. It was funny, I actually ran into him randomly with Ben like 2 years ago at a restaurant in LA, you know, he walked by and saw us and said, I came to say hi to Ben. And like, a super nice guy. He's a solid writer.
You know, and he's plugging away at it. And no one ever talks about that. Mm-hmm. Because you can't. It's not your public thing. You can't show that. And he's doing this in book form. And I found it really interesting. So that's why, and at the end of the day, like the superhero part, fine, if you've got to put that in there to sell the book. When he did that, it sounded like who was the guy who did Dynamo 5 and Jay?
Jay Ferber.
It felt like a Jay Ferber book after that.
Mm-hmm.
Which isn't necessarily.
Although I did think it was interesting. So he puts the suit on, and it's blue and white or black and white. It's hard to see with coloring. But then at the end, you see in Chicago, there's a guy who is in a red and white version of the suit robbing a store or a bank or something. A bank. That's kind of interesting. It's not just this one guy, there's multiple. The first suit found a generally good person who is going to become a hero. And then clearly, whoever in Chicago found it is not so good. So
and all that stuff is classic. But, you know, I guess the more that, you know, you can weave stuff in and keep it away from, easy to predict stuff, and then he writes his book and is a success. That's not interesting.
Right.
Yeah. So, I did find it compelling. I guess I don't have a lot of hopes for it going forward, but I thought it was I thought there was a lot of interesting.
Yeah, I liked the first issue. Mm-hmm. I also really liked Eternals number 2, which is funny. I almost didn't read it. If you recall, I was on the fence after the first issue. Like, I liked it, but I didn't love it, and I was a little confused. For whatever reason, I thought this was really fun, compelling issue. Did you read it?
Yes. I almost didn't. I did it out of, I was like, well, I should for the show, kind of more than anything else.
For one thing, I thought the little explainer in the middle was helpful, because I don't know anything about the Eternals. So there's a bit in the middle, which I thought was the end of the book, where they go, sort of go through the timeline of the Titans and how the Titans broke, one faction broke off, and led to the Titans, which led to the birth of Thanos, so they're indirectly responsible for his being there. So that little snake timeline, actually, I was like, oh, okay, now I feel like I know what's going on much more. But it starts off with a big fight with Thanos, with the blonde guy.
Icarus.
I don't know their names. Fights Thanos, gets his ass kicked by Thanos, and the sort of the fallout of that. There's a great panel that Isaac Rubin drew with shocked Thanos, much like Taskmaster on page 8 of a digital reader, where he, because Sprite had tricked him. He didn't actually kill the guy, the Eternal. He didn't actually rip his head off, so it was an illusion. And Isad Ribic's whole, he's a great artist, but his thing, like if I could identify a thing that he has, it's shocked faces. It's everyone with mouths hanging open and surprise. I really like the little parable in the middle with the old man, where we get sort of a flashback to Icarus, and he has a vision about a young man on the beach seeing a creature. So he goes and finds the man and tells him, it's a primitive man. The man thinks he's a god, and he says, you sort of have to keep watching this beach for this creature. And the guy basically does it for his whole life until he's an old man, collapses and dies on the beach, and then his grandson sees the creature. I thought it was a really great sort of classic folly of the gods kind of parable.
Right.
Who ruined this guy's life. So I felt like I knew the characters, even if I don't know their names, I know a little bit better. And I thought the whole bit at the end with all of them together trying to figure out what was going on was good. I thought it looked great, obviously, and I, for whatever reason, I just was more into what was going on. Slightly less confused.
I kind of had an opposite experience. It was that, like, I kind of glazed over after a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really taking in information. I liked the little parable bit in the middle. But I'll be honest, I don't know if I fully understand it. You know,
the guy,
he said, wait here and tell me if the monster's coming. So the guy waits there for his whole life and misses most of it, but he still has a family and does everything, and that, you know, they miss him, and then he dies, and then Icarus comes back, and then after all these years, the truth was revealed, that his father was not mad, that made it work, and I just didn't quite follow it, and I wasn't driven to sort of reread it and understand it. Mm-hmm. I tried a little bit, and I was like, I don't know what this is. So I did have trouble with that. I think it looked beautiful. It's really interesting to me because that you said, I think, you know, Isad Rivik's one thing is that sort of shock.
I think of him most is,
yeah,
characters with their mouths open, their eyes. Like,
and
oh,
that's fine.
Yeah.
But when I'm looking at page 8, that's the one you're talking about, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. Damn. The actual drawing and composition on there was my favorite part of it. I don't think noticed the face, but I noticed that drawing in the sort of extreme canted angle. So we're looking at him as if we were on the ground and tilted slightly. And, mm-hmm. you know, you've got this really kind of interesting drawing of Icarus falling down in front of him. That was just beautiful. You had the rubble floating up behind him. Man, I know there was a time where I first just didn't get Isad Rubik, but I was wrong about that. That was years and years ago, and I've definitely come around. But, man, it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. But story-wise, I just didn't – it's entirely humorless, or at least in a way that I think.
Yeah, I was literally about to talk about the Eternal who's obsessed with Hollywood movies.
In that way, that seemed out of place.
I don't know enough about the Eternals. I don't know if that's – you know. Yeah.
I just mean tone-wise. I was like, wait, are they talking about a movie? That's weird. That's what I thought.
The great machine, whatever it is that created the Earth that they are responsible for maintaining, doesn't work anymore. And so it's going to cause a massive – global environmental disaster where the Earth is going to die, which is pretty close to what's happening now. And one guy's like, is it like Geostorm?
Yeah, so when he said that, I thought,
yeah, I didn't,
is this an event that they're talking about? They can't be talking about that stupid movie. But they were.
Hey, maybe there's one Eternal super into disaster movies. You don't
understand. That movie where they let you know in the trailer who the bad guy was. That should have been a reveal in the film, but they were like, we can't trust people about that. We'll tell them that it was Andy Garcia all along in the trailer.
Yeah, I don't think they really cared.
No.
Did you see it?
Clearly. Of course I did. It's a weather machine that messes up all the weather on Earth. I don't remember a thing about it, but you're damn right I saw it.
Was it good?
I think I saw two minutes of it.
In the beginning where they're in their cars and it was like...
The hail?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I saw it on a plane. Like I watched on like the JetBlue thing.
I see.
Which is not the best way to watch a movie.
No.
Although that is also how I watched the Justice League movie, and I don't think it did it any favors or harm.
Yeah. 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 So I liked it. I didn't love it, and I don't know, you know, how long I'll stay on, but I was surprised to have liked it as much as I did.
To be fair, my criticisms of it aren't really like any... It's a good comic book. It's thoughtful. It's well-made. It just, you know...
Oh, I'm not saying it's great. Yeah. I just like, oh, I had fun with that. That was surprising.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair. Oh, patrons. You know what I'm talking about? You know what I mean? About those patrons? You're thinking, how can I get on some of that patron action? Well, friend, I got information for you.
Yep.
You want to go over to patreon.com/ifanboy. You know who the patrons are? The good people.
Mm.
They like a thing and they say, you know, I like this thing that's happening. I want to be a part of that. I want to help them out. I want to make my stamp. I want to do what's right. That's what they're doing.
Yep.
And what has happened out of that is that now there's all these extra shows that we have to do all the time and all of these tasks that didn't exist before. But here's the thing. We're happy to do it for you. We're happy to do it for you because people appreciate it, and then we have fun with it after the fact. We wouldn't have done it otherwise. So we've unlocked the patron pick, which happens on this show every time. That has become a really fun thing. We've done the patron powers. If you donate at $5 or higher level, you get a patron power. We've been doing this for years now, I realized. Years! How cool is that? There's the Talksplodes. Sometimes a scheduling problem, but we always get in the end. There's Booksplodes. You know, Connor and I have to read books and talk about them that we would not have done on the show before. There's the Mediasplodes. We get together to talk about all these things that are not comics that are super fun. There's the YouTube stuff being uploaded. All of that's a big list when I put it all out there.
Yep.
And it's the patrons who've come along and said, you know, like, we want to support this thing. We're going to do this thing. That other stuff is nice. But I get the feeling that that's not why it's happening. The next stretch goal that exists right now, we might look at this, would be a G.I. Joe cartoon podcast, doing one episode at a time or something like that, and then maybe a barbecue email and video show. That is a thing we used to do. Was it once a year?
Once a year. We did it for July 4th.
Once a year on July 4th, we would do a show where we would answer emails while we made barbecue and talked about it, which sounds ridiculous. Like, if you weren't watching back then, you're like, what on earth are they talking about? That's the thing. The other thing that happens is the community. There's a new rise of the community as a result of the patrons over on the patron group at Facebook and the iFanboy Discord server. It's just those great little communities where people talk and are generally having a good time and talking about things that are interesting to them. It's like the Discord server's very got a lot of different channels and stuff for your I'm pretty sure they calls me to buy a TV. I'm almost positive that it was like one day they were talking about TVs and I was like, you're right, my TV is old. And it's not. My TV was fine. There's nothing wrong with it. But it wasn't OLED and my blacks could have been blacker.
Sure.
And here we are. And then it broke and now I'm waiting for the new one to show up
today. Why doesn't Josh have any savings?
I do. Largely because my wife is responsible. Where I grew up poor and will buy anything immediately.
Yeah.
I read an article about that once, and it's become my excuse for why I am bad with money.
Mm-hmm.
But I have cool shit. iFanboy.threadless.com is another place that you can go if you want to get some stuff. We have 8 designs available right now to be put on t-shirts, sweatshirts, tank tops, probably some panties. I don't know. I don't know what some kind of underpants I've never seen before.
I don't know if they sell those things. I don't know if I want people to buy them with our stuff on them.
That's hilarious. Other stuff like that. You can put it on there. Go over to some kind of underpants I've never even seen before.
Right.
Say firm on them. we when we think of a new one, we'll get a new one up there for you. Over at ifanboy.com/support. I'm going to hurry this up. If you don't want to deal with any of that, there's a PayPal link over there. And then finally, ifanboy.com/Amazon. There are links to buy all of the books that we talk about on the Booksplode and always the pick of the week. There's a general link. So that's there. Everybody who does any part of any of those things, or you know, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And the rest of you, you're still good people. I'm not holding it against you. Do what you can. If you can't, that's okay. But thank you. Let's talk about comics more.
So we have one more issue of the Green Lantern after this.
Thank God.
This is a tale of two books. The first season was terrific. It was incredible. It was one of our favorite books of the year. The second season has been bizarre. And for me, not unreadable, but unfollowable. Thank God for Liam Sharp doing career work.
Oh,
because it's
that's the story.
That's the reason I read this book right now.
I mean, it's imagine. So we'd be 23 issues into this thing.
Yeah.
I have no idea what Grant Morrison is on about. It is the most obtuse thing I've read in the longest time. But at the same time, you're looking at Liam Sharp. And every single issue I go, is this still Liam Sharp? Because he's just...
He keeps changing his style up from page to page.
It's insane. And not, but not in a jarring way. No. It's not like, oh, what's he doing this for? It just, it fits in a way that the style and feel and aesthetic of the art tells me a hell of a lot more about what's going on than whatever the fuck the people are saying, because I am 1,000% lost. And yeah, every time I think I'm okay, I'm kind of getting on, the next issue comes along and I'm like, what the hell? I'm totally lost. And yeah, and I woe betide anybody who's like, oh, you guys just love Grant Morrison. I do, but I don't know what this is. This was the Grant Morrison that I was afraid of when I was younger, and it feels like they're like, just do whatever you want. And he's like, okay.
We do love Grant Morrison. It doesn't mean we always love what he does. I can think of many books of his I haven't enjoyed. I can think of many books of his that are some of my favorite comics of all time. But there's just as many where I'm just like, oh, okay. That's just the way it goes. He swings for the fences and it doesn't always work. There was an interesting page here where he... So I don't like these new young Guardians who just look like bald people. There's one part where he has a vision of the three new Green Lanterns, the Teen Lantern and the kid from the YA book, and then the woman from the book we're not reading, Far Sector. And I don't know what that was supposed to represent, but I could guess, but I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know what's going on.
How about that Liam Sharp?
Yeah, really good. Really, really good.
Yep. So there's that. Yeah. But there's one left. I think it's worth mentioning. Oh, sure. And it's also just like you and I are both like, all right, let's get through this, let's do it. Like, it's like walking through a snowstorm with the wind blowing at you.
I don't regret reading it every time because I think Liam Sharp is doing incredible work, and so I don't regret
that. I have to take a big deep breath before I start it. I'm like, okay, here we go.
I have hope. I always hope this will be the one that sort of goes back and makes sense, and maybe it'll all make sense in the end. I don't think it's so.
He's done it before. Sure. I don't see that coming because it all seems so disparate. There's just, I don't know what one thing, if there's, I'm sure there's a connecting line, but I cannot find it. Mm-hmm. I wanted to check back in on Scarenthood. Mm-hmm. Scarenthood, number one, was my pick of the week a number of months back. And I've still been reading it. It's this weird little story from Nick Roche about a single dad who has a little girl and the wife is sort of missing. And he makes friends with some of the other parents from the daycare and they go on a sort of mystery, supernatural thing. And then in the last issue, they all turned on him because he's a desperate weirdo. And then this issue, they go to confront him. He takes him to a priest. It's a whole, I'm not entirely sure, but I do think that there's a really nice drama that is happening in the middle of it. It was this dad who is way overwhelmed by a situation. We find out that his wife is sick and she's away. And so he is taking care of his daughter and he doesn't have, like, he has a job, but he's not able to pay much attention to it because there's so many things going on. He's got to take care of his daughter. He can only afford to put her in the daycare for about half the day. And so he's got this little amount of time to do all of his job and he's just stressed to hell. And, you know, he's friends with these other parents, but they can't do a lot. I think there's probably something in there that it speaks to me. And well, it's not my situation. It's much more, it's different, and it's stressful in a certain way.
It's not exactly a situation, but it's not exactly not your situation either.
Yeah, there's days. There's a lot of humanity in it. I really like the art. I think the characters are really interesting. It takes place in, I want to say Great Britain, but at certain times in this, I know it's Great Britain, but at times I was like, is this Northern Ireland? I wasn't quite sure. Doesn't matter. But the, you know, the dialogue's really good and it's written very in the vernacular of the folks who are there. And Britain can be a melting pot, so they could be from everywhere. Who knows? Mm-hmm. So I'm glad I'm still reading it. The supernatural part, notwithstanding, I think it's, there's something to do with fairies, mm-hmm, like the Neil Gaiman type of fairies.
Right. Yep. F-A-E-R fairies.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I'm still reading it. I still like it. If you thought maybe
I forgot.
Are
you still reading Birthright?
I am.
You the whole time?
Yeah.
Wow.
There hasn't been, for me, a heck of a lot to talk about in most of the issues. There was a big battle. It was kind of what it was. I like the characters a lot, and I feel like I'm connected to them. The overall story, I've followed and not followed it as we've gone through it, but basically the big battle's over. There's four issues left. This is 46. It'll go through 50. And so this is a little bit of an aftermath epilogue period, but there's still, mm-hmm, stuff going on. I want to think, I'd compare it to like Lord of the Rings after the book's over. And the last one, there's about a half a book left, is the scouring of the Shire and all the stuff that goes on. That's kind of what's happening with this one, is that there's cleanup to be done. It doesn't end with them sort of standing over their vanquished hero in the credits roll, mm-hmm, or the villain. So it's kind of interesting, but also I think it is time. It is time, you know, like to wrap this guy up, yeah, but you know, it's a hell of an accomplishment. You can do 50 issues of this kind of thing. You know, the same artist, Andre Versan, through all of it. It's beautiful. Like, it's a really well-drawn book. It's a guy, I didn't know that name at all, but, you know, showed up every time. It's gotten better through the whole thing. There's a lot of heart in it and, you know, family drama and all sorts of this weird stuff. The setup, you know, how it begins is still, you know, this kid goes to a place where life goes a lot. Time moves a lot faster than it does here. So when he returns, he's grown up and his parents, you know, just thought he was missing for a number of years. You know, there's a lot of drama in there. There's a ton of it. And I've overall enjoyed it. I've liked it a lot. So there's four left. I will report back on sort of how it ends. But that's where we are.
I wanted to mention Rorschach number 5, Tom King, Jorge Fornes, Dave Stewart, Clayton Cowles, because I feel like an idiot for not realizing until now that the main guy is basically Columbo. He has the hair. He has the jacket. He's a little short. And at one point, he's looking at the camera, and I was like, oh, right. Tom King's a big Columbo fan, too. Why didn't I realize this? He looks exactly like Columbo. So that's what I wanted to mention. I like the issue. It's basically a character piece for the conservative candidate for president who is the target of the assassination attempt in the first issue. And it starts off with this Secret Service agent telling Columbo, because I'm just going to call him next, I don't know what his name is, that this guy's the real deal. He's a good guy who can really change this country and turn it around. And of course, we know he's not evil, but he's definitely not like the saint that he's made out to be in the very beginning of the issue as we learn about him.
Which I think, you know, that's a very interesting and
a little bit of LBJ in there.
I got thoughts. I got to read those books, but I have thoughts. He's a really interesting one. Guy who does whatever he needs to do the good thing. And is it about his ego, but does that matter? Oh, I love that.
No, there's just something with the meetings in the toilet.
I know. But that's what this guy is like. Yeah. So you got to wonder, like, oh, he's kind of an asshole in the room, but does that matter?
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, do you need a guy like that to get stuff done? Is his heart in the right place? Does it matter? You know, like, anyway. I know what direction we're going in now, I think. But I know that there's also going to be a twist on that. But at least I don't. The early on, it's like, I don't know what I'm reading. And now I do. Mostly. Or at least enough to move on.
Those are the books we wanted to talk about. Patreon.com/iFanboy. The patrons can vote to add a book to the rundown. It's called the Patron Pick. And this week we had a three-way horse race with three books leading the race at any given time during the voting period. But we ended up with Black Hammer Visions, number one, as the winner from Dark Horse Comics. Patton Oswalt is the writer. Dean Kotz is the artist. Jason Wordy is the colorist. And Nate Picos is the letterer. And this is the new anthology miniseries in the Black Hammer world, featuring writing by different art writers who are not Jeff Lemire. We've had non-Jeff Lemire Black Hammer books. We had a Matt Kent one, but here, this is specifically about other writers doing one-shot issues. Like, this is Patton Oswalt. Next month is Jeff Johns. So we're getting
Dean Kotz. Is he the main artist on the main book?
No.
Or is not? Okay. No. I just know that name.
But I thought it was really good.
So what I think is interesting is that earlier you were like, oh, this is just Greatest American Hero.
Yeah.
And then after that, we said, oh, this is Columbo.
Right.
And then I was right at the end of this book, and I went, oh, this is Ghost World.
Exactly Ghost World, yeah.
It's exactly.
This is a little one-shot about two girls from, they're not exactly the Ghost World characters, but they're the Ghost World characters.
It's Eunice and not Enid.
Right.
And it's, I don't know the other girls' names.
Whatever their names are. They just graduated from high school. They just come from their graduation, and they're at the diner talking about their time at high school. And as it turns out, they went to school with Gail Gibbons, who in the Black Hammer world is basically Shazam mixed a little bit with Kid Marvel Man, Miracle Man, who was trapped in the body. And that's her thing. Gail Gibbons is Shazam, who's been unable to return back into...
Which also happened in the Sentry, which Jeff Lemire wrote. Is there's the their kid... Kid Marvel, Jesus, Captain Marvel Jr. is like a short order cook in that story, and Sentry he can't Jr. change back. Yeah, in the Sentry book, and he can't change back either, and he becomes the villain in that story.
That's Kid Marvel Man, for sure. Gail Gibbons is not the villain in Black Hammer, but she's just, she's just the cantankerous 50-year-old woman trapped in an, I don't even know what age Gail Gibbons' body is. But
8 to 10.
She doesn't age. She doesn't grow.
She just wants a cigarette and a solid lay.
So I thought as a character piece, this was fun as them sort of dealing with the memory of, wait, there was that girl that joined us in junior high and then she went away and then we saw her cousin again, who looked exactly like her, and wait a minute. And I thought it was a one-shot character piece. It was really fun, and I thought the art was terrific.
Yeah, I agree. I enjoyed it. You know, at the end, I thought, oh, it's weird that you're going to do Ghost World, but as an homage. And also, that was 20 years ago now. It's not like anybody, you know, it's not like picking up the most cool thing, you know, and being like, oh, man, I'm going to do an homage to this. It is a little bit of a love letter in that sense. I think that not being a Black Hammer reader, I figured it out. You know, like I was like, oh, I see. That's probably one of the characters from that book. Created a cool little mystery, you know, if you're watching this from a different perspective, you know, it's sort of like, what would it be like to be in this world where there's this person and how they would get by? It's funny because I thought, wouldn't you move out of the town? Because the teachers don't move on, even though the students do. And I thought the strongest parts of it were, I think Patton Oswalt has come in and done comics now and again.
Yep.
But for a little while, it was obvious.
He does the MODOK book we talked about before.
Yeah. But, you know, they were always sort of silly and like, here's the funny guy and he'll do a funny thing. And this wasn't exactly that. And I thought that it showed a little more experience mm-hmm. with the format. And basically he's gotten to be a better writer, I think, in this format. He's, you know, right. not understanding his comedy or anything like that. Anyway, I think the best bits were Gail. You know, she's old and she knows things, and she tells the one girl out of nowhere, she's like, you know, keep being weird, don't let this town do whatever, you know, which is a nice thing that somebody needs to hear, which I thought, but she must not like the other girl. And then she tells the other girl, you guys aren't going to be friends anymore, and that's okay, you have to go forward with it. And I was like, that's some wisdom that people could have used. Yeah. And I thought this was really nice.
You're going to grow apart and it's fine.
And then finally, I thought the fact that Eunice, which I wanted to say Enid, goes and finds her and he's like, all right, just tell me what's up.
Yeah.
Like, I figured this out. And they did. There wasn't, you know, and then there's some other mystery that happens at the end of it.
One of the other characters, so I don't really know who her DC analog is, sort of wipes her memory.
Yeah.
Do you think it needed the Ghost World quote at the end?
No.
Or is that too on the nose?
It's certainly, yeah. I had figured it out just before that, you know, like it dawned on me. And then that was like, oh, I guess I was right. On the one hand, I think that if he didn't, then it maybe kind of looked like he was trying to rip off a thing. And I think that by putting it there, he's saying, this is just a tribute, man. I just love that thing.
Yeah, I'm on the fence about it. And I think that's a good point that I didn't think of, is that it sort of makes it clear this is a homage.
Yeah. It's not, I don't have an idea, so I just did this other thing. It's giving credit, you know. It's like when artists will do a piece of work in the style of somebody else. So it'll be like, you know, so-and-so after Alex Toth. I think it's like that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
they're totally acknowledging the thing that they're using.
Well, I liked it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was fun.
Ratings.
Ratings.
Ratings. Out of five, I'm going to give it 4. I liked it a lot. I thought the art was terrific.
I want to go between 3.75 and 4, but I'll lean to 4.
All right. So you're going to read the next issue of Visions?
I think that really depends.
It's Jeff Johns and Scott Collins.
Really?
Yeah.
That's going to be a very different book than this one.
The preview image is a bloody axe and somebody running from somebody else. So I don't know. I guess.
I got to say, I saw that another Black Hammer book had been voted a patron pick, and I was like, oh, we've done this many times. I've given the same review over and over again, and this subverted my expectations, and I like that.
Well, good. Patreon.com/iFanboy is where the patrons vote, but also at the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show, like these patrons.
Lando Enchantment, which is a lot of different mixed metaphors at the same time.
Not his real name. Can't be.
No, I mean, if it is, bravo, Mr. and Mrs. Enchantment. like, that's already your last name. You're like, what if we name him Lando? and then the mother was like, good idea, Dengar.
And if he's not the coolest kid in school, then
yeah, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. I always tried to give my first son a name like that, and I think that would have been a mistake. Not Lando, but like
Wedge.
It was like a little bit where I was like, what if we name him Elvis? She was like, no. I was like, all right, all right.
Did you even float Wedge?
No. Right. But I did try to go with Quint for some time.
Did you float Wedge as a middle name?
No. I don't think I was a zealot at that point.
Hmm. Well, you had another one. You had a chance to make up for it.
Yeah, it's true.
He's kind of Wedge-like.
No, the little one's more like a Han Solo type.
He looks like Wedge.
Okay.
I'm just saying, I don't know. He's got brown hair. What does Wedge look like? Anyway, we need to talk about Lando.
This is all stalling. I should have thought of something in that meantime. Every year,
yeah.
on January 1st, Lando gets to pick one skill at which he's the best in the world at it.
Just for 1 year.
Yep, for 1 year he gets to be the best in the world at that thing. So this year on January 2nd, he's like, I am the world's best sushi cook. And then the next year, I am the world's best ski jumper. And he can choose the thing. Now, it might have to do with whatever he's interested in at a given time. It might be what the world needs. And that is the burden that is on Lando Enchantment. With great power comes great responsibility, or a bitchin' good time.
And the thing is, like, being the best doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to succeed. Like, I'm going to be the world's best writer this year. It doesn't mean you're going to get a book published.
Well, that's a problem, though, because he can't do it the next year. He goes back to whatever his, you know, his normal thing was.
Right. Or you get it published. Like, what's next? You're like,
He can't reuse.
Right.
It's like the girl in The Runaways who can't reuse a spell.
I guess you'd have to write like 10 books in that year.
Mm-hmm.
And put one out a year for anyway.
Well, I'm just being good at it.
This, yeah.
Just being good at it doesn't mean you do it. Ask Kyle Higgins.
Ben Huang can project his memories onto a television. And his memories are seen in, you know, the highest fidelity that that system allows. So, like, you know, it could up to like 4K, 7.1 Dolby Atmos surround sound.
I really like the specific technical aspect of that.
But it's not like from his perspective. It's like it's been shot and directed by like a peak TV person. You know, it's like it looks like a peak TV television show of his memory.
Are the people in it the actual people, or are they like?
Oh, it's actually his memory. It's just repackaged as. As
slickly shot and edited piece.
Suddenly his high school days look like Friday Night Lights or something.
Here's my question. Does this work when he's asleep and he's dreaming?
No. He consciously does it.
Okay.
Yeah. Not his dreams, his memories.
Right. Yeah. Well, yeah.
Not always the same. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Thanks to Ben and Lando for being patrons.
What have we here?
Are we going to do one email?
Which one? Two. The second one.
Ken from the Great White North of Canada. Ken says, why are Superman and Batman vastly more popular than, say, Doc Savage? Is it simply the slight difference in media? I don't know.
I like this question, but I couldn't. It wasn't the one that I was like, here's why. I didn't really think about it, but I only had a few days. And I don't know that I have an answer, but I think if we compare it to Doc Savage, some of the things from the past that were a big deal then didn't age as well because they fit more in the time period. And so the context of that time period is lost on us now, where another concept like Superman is pretty universal. Captain America, pretty universal and can be adapted for the time, whereas Doc Savage... like, it's a weird name. Maybe that was a word that was sort of used more in a different way back then, or like the Phantom didn't.
Well, the pulp characters were supplanted by the superheroes, but the real question is, why is one thing more popular than another? Is often you can't know. It's unknowable. Like, why is Superman more popular than, well, Superman's a bad example because there was really no other superheroes around, but why is Captain America more popular than the other patriotic heroes that they put out at the time? Why is Batman more popular than Namor? Because they all came around at the same time. It's just a matter of there's something that people respond to in the alchemy of the creation more than the other one. And it's not necessarily good or bad. Like, the pulp characters are awesome, but they were supplanted by superheroes.
I think there is an element of reduction, meaning that there's something in that creation, in the name, in the design, that reduces the main element down to something so, I want to say pure, but there's probably a better word for it, you know, that it just resonates across generations and it carries on. Like, something about Batman, and that's not something I think you put a finger on.
Right. So, I mean, it's hard. It's just something people react in a, you know, art is emotional, you know, it's not clinical. You know, you can't put a formula together to create great art. It's just, or to understand or love it. You can try, but like ultimately it's what touches you. Why does someone look at a painting and one person loves it, another person hates it? It's an emotional response. And that's, why did people respond emotionally to Batman versus Doc Savage? I don't know. I mean, they just did.
So, well, I mean, but I think it, I think it is more specific than that. And let me use a metaphor. Yeah, I know, Josh. That's weird you're going to use a metaphor, but here we go. And I'm going to use a music metaphor. There is a lot of music out there that is more interesting and well-conceived and more emotion, you know, more intellectually charged than like blues. Blues is relatively simple in terms of music, but there is something about the connections of those sounds, which there's not many, that just seem to hold on better than other stuff from that time. You can listen to a blues record that was recorded in 1920 and feel something that you might not if you listen to like a big band thing of the time. It's again, it's reduced down to something.
But you, again, all those things you just said could be flipped on its head and someone else could have a different reaction. Someone could say, I love big band music, and I hate the blues. Like it's all emotional. It's all
right. But we're talking about a widespread personal thing. We're talking about the things that affect the most people more than others. I think it's, again, if you look at music.
Yeah, if you go that way, the big band is way more popular than the blues.
Not the point. I was talking about like how it, stuff that sort of sticks around and influences stuff that goes. So you'll get a thing with musicians where they'll be like, why do people like Led Zeppelin more than they like Rush? Rush are clearly much better musicians. But like basically that one band got to the heart of something, even though it's Rolling Stones is another reason. Like it's very simple, but there's a thing about that that endures longer than things that are not that. And I think when you talk about Superman, it's a very, very simple concept from his design to the idea of who he is to the name itself. You like, you can almost like you can pin so many things to it because there's not a lot to have to hang on to, that the idea of it moves along a lot better than some of the other ones. And Namor is a tough one, but you know, I think it has to do with some sort of reduction of aesthetic in there that carries on, but you can't exactly understand why or put your finger on what that is. I don't think
the whole pulp genre was supplanted. You know,
mm-hmm.
There's trends.
There's trends that happen in terms of like westerns or war or you know that happen not just in comics but in movies and things like that.
Right. But what I'm saying really is though you had popular characters like Doc Savage and like the Phantom who filled that role. The 30s adventuring character, and then they, for whatever reason, they were taken over by superheroes.
Well, I mean, even superheroes in a concept is like it's an extension of that, though. Like,
yeah.
For some reason, superheroes, their popularity has ebbed and flowed, but has not gone away, and it has come back at times, you know, in an unimaginable way. We, you know, like over and over and over again. And like you and I like westerns, but we know the westerns are not coming back. It is not going to be the dominant force in film and television at any point. It's a footnote. Again, that's like jazz or like whatever. And the superhero will not go away. And then, Batman and Superman. Like
power fantasy. They're never going away.
I guess. It's very interesting. But it gets to something very human that, you know, that you and I responded to as little kids and are still talking about today. I don't know what that is.
The world is scary and we're fragile and we wish we weren't.
I wish
we had more control and power over it, but we don't.
Or you know, you want there to be people. See, I don't think about it that way. I think I want there to be good people who have power who are helping because they'd have to, because it's the right thing to do. Or I'd like to think that, like, if I had that kind of power, if I could do that, I would want to do those things. I think that's something, there's a nobility to it. You can look at it the other way, and there's been lots of stories about it that way, but I think that has something to do with it.
Yeah, it's all weird. Why does one thing rise and another fall? It's just
yeah.
Tastes change.
Josh said,
Western was the dominant American pop cultural genre for decades, and then one day it wasn't.
It was. I mean, also it was, you know, big part of the national identity. You know, Manifest Destiny and expansion to the West was still a thing in living memory. You know, Harry Truman's mom. You know, they lived on the frontier. You know, right. they, you know, that stuff was all very real up in the early, you know, early 1900s. Wyatt Earp went to Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, like you could know a person right now who knew Wyatt Earp or his parents did. And that's crazy.
But, right, but the point way, is, and then one day it just wasn't. It just,
yeah.
Things,
yes.
That just changes. You yeah. know, it's hard yep. to say. Alan Moore tried his best to bring those characters back, but didn't stick. So contact@ifanboy.com is how you can write in, like Ken from Canada. Hope you're enjoying your health care up there, Ken. What do we got? What do we got, Josh?
Let's see. There was a Booksplode recently released, Jack Kirby, The Epic Life and the King of Comics by Tom Scioli, which Connor and I talked about, and you can get that podcast in the feed. I'm just going to go through these because it's easier.
Right.
We really enjoyed it. This past week, you and the Animation Brain Trust talked about Batman Soul of the Dragon.
70s Kung Fu Batman.
That's not a big bad call. The idea
awesome.
Is that this week, a Talksplode should go up.
Uh-oh.
But there was a delay because of an illness, and I'm going to try it. So I can't promise it, but I'm going for it. This is why we don't tell you who's coming. Right. You never know. And then after that, we've got a patron hangout coming out on February 20th, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, and then a Media Splode sometime
Hopefully the week after, because we're going to record the Media Splode that day, too.
Yeah. Yep. So that's the stuff that's coming up. Finally, head over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our shows and our vast history of comic book writing and many podcasts from all of our talented writing staff, which doesn't include me, like facebook.com/ifanboy. And I made that a comparison, but it was supposed to be an imperative. Like facebook.com/ifanboy and follow @ifanboy on Twitter and @ifanboycomics on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. You can see best of the week in panels when we're able to get those up. And you can finally follow us individually, C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram as well. And then there's the YouTube page at youtube.com/ifanboy. Like and subscribe. I can't even say it with a straight face. I don't know how those people do it. To keep up to date on the old video show reuploads, this past week we've got DC edition Vault comic. We each pick a trade or a collected edition. So we have Man of Steel, John Byrne's thing, Cosmic Odyssey, Mike Mignola.
That one dude wrote in recently and asked if we'd ever review it. And this was the video show we talked about Cosmic Odyssey. It's finally up on YouTube.
And JSA, which was, I guess, the miniseries that Jeff Johns and James Robinson did?
I think so.
Okay. There's a mini that Ron did about Iron Man 243.
No, you did that.
No, Ron, it's his show. I went and looked at it. Is it me?
It's you.
I swear I saw him holding
Tony Stark shot Iron Man 243. Look back at Iron Man 243. It's you.
I looked at it last night. I was very tired.
I literally put the show on YouTube and redid the clips and everything.
I believe you. I don't not believe you.
There's another Iron Man mini from Ron coming next week. Which talks about Iron Man skates. But you did the Iron Man 243, Tony Stark shot.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yep.
I don't know why I saw that. Anyway, I didn't find another new one there.
This morning, well, as we record this our Discovering Manga episode, in which we had the viewers choose manga for us to read because we weren't really up on manga, and we read the three or four top choices and talked about it on that show and generally embarrassed ourselves.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. I imagine that's terrible, and it's aged even worse.
So those are on YouTube. If you like the show, please leave a star rating or review for this show or any podcast you listen to on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from, wherever fine podcasts are sold. That's how people find shows, and we thank you for doing so. We really do appreciate that. Even better than that is word of mouth. If people ask all the time on social media, what podcasts are you listening to? What comics podcasts do you like? People mention us all the time. We thank them for doing that. That's how people find the show, even after all these years. Even after all these years, podcasts are new to people. And so we thank you for spreading the word, and we do appreciate it. And until next week, I am Connor.
And I'm Josh. Thank you so much for listening and contributing and listening to us. Still, it means the world to us. This past year, it's been hugely helpful. So I don't know why I decided to do that just now, but it was a thought I had, and I meant it. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and speak for Connor, too. I believe that he feels that way also. I didn't even ask him. I know. Stay safe. Wash your hands. Wear your mask.
I do feel that way. I just didn't know what was going on, so I wasn't making any sudden movements.
Don't move. I don't know what he's doing. I might have to edit this out. I think we're safe. Okay, good.
Bye.
Killing me by the grave. I'm gonna drive my blues away. Going to the steel bed. See ya.